is to be preferred that as you listen to this recording, you lie down, clothing loose, shoes off, eyes closed, and follow closely. It has occurred to me that the tensions under which you are being driven may need some relief, and this relief is wholly within your reach. Recently, you may have been beset or troubled with anxious concern about one or several things. Now, your concern has, in all probability, seemed so great to you that you have felt like giving up, or that there just couldn't be any help. Just remind yourself, as there can be no love so great that tomorrow may not find a greater, just so there can be no trouble so great that that trouble could not be greater. It always seems that the things we worry about never come about in such intensity as our worry predicts. For example, the fear of losing one's mind is often a thought that runs through the minds of so many persons. Now, this fear of losing the mind or becoming psychotic is such a common thought that we never hesitate to discuss it. I have found that if you undergo times of unusual stress or strain, you might become fearful of becoming mentally ill. You may fear that your mind is deteriorating to such an extent that you feel you may have to go to a hospital for the mentally sick. It has often occurred to me that if all of the people who think they are hopeless mental cases were to be admitted into hospitals, there would have to be a hospital extension in each and every home in order to accommodate the cases. Now, your thoughts about your shortcomings often begin early in life, and they'll build up like a snowball rolling down a hill until the problem gets to gigantic proportions. Now, this problem snowball finally comes to a stop, either slowly or abruptly. You find that it will become somewhat more or less disintegrated, and that the picture becomes a little confused, untidy, and debris-strewn. Had your snowball been stopped before it became so large, the scene or location would have been easier to clean up. Just so can your thoughts about your shortcomings, failures, and mistakes be taken care of early, and thus the solving of your worries won't take so much time, giving you a life that will be rid of your unpleasant wonderings. Now, the longer you have a fear of a certain thing, and the longer you permit it to continue unsolved, the more difficult the solution will be. Such a fear becomes more and more ingrown as your fear is permitted to continue unexplained. Usually, a fear of something may early in your life set up quite an anxiety. At first, the anxiety may come as being connected to or connected with this one fear. Say, for instance, an early fear of the dark. If this anxiety is not checked by dispersing the fear, then your anxiety continues growing and soon becomes associated with other thoughts and fears, with your new fears being more readily taken on. With each of your successive fears, it is easier for the anxiety to come on you, resulting in an anxiety reflex setting up and the pattern becoming subconscious. As we go over these matters, you will possibly be thinking that your worries are so much more serious than anyone else has experienced, and that there can be no help for you. As previously suggested to you, it is quite a common thought for a person to be obsessed with an idea that he is losing his mind. To simply tell you that you are not is difficult for you to believe. This fear and anxiety about losing your mind has been progressing so steadily and surely in your way of thinking for such a long continued time that a contrary statement is unbelievable. Your anxiety reflex, being so strong and persistent, and perhaps growing stronger as time progresses, it has grown from what seemed to be a simple thought into gigantic proportions. Now, as we progress in our talk, try to think back as early in your life as possible to the time you first became fearful of anything. What was it that you feared? You will have difficulty at first thought in fixing the time of the appearance of the fear or first anxiety reaction. As you ponder repeatedly, you may be able to relive earlier and earlier experiences, but admit freely to yourself what actually happened, how you felt, what you said, what you did, what the other person said and did. Can you recall how they felt? How much did you care for them? did what the other person or persons say or do to you hurt your feelings, as the saying goes? How antagonistic did the actions or words of the other person make you feel? Or just what was your reaction? If you will face freely and frankly, admitting to yourself, aloud if you wish, your life story from your earliest recollection, abandoning all inhibitions of thinking and feeling, reliving time and again all phases of your life, going over the more painful emotional situations, you may derive much relief. Your self-analysis may give you relief, while on the other hand, you may require that your story be told to another, such as your psychiatrist or other trusted friend. Thus, however, in freely admitting to yourself all possible phases of your early, middle, and later experiences, you should obtain much relief. The very fact that you are honest in dealing with yourself and your problems, your thought-up shortcomings, your failures, which may have taken on too much importance, your happiness, your desires, thwarted or actual, may give you so much satisfaction and relief that additional interpretation may not be necessary. Now, as you think back from earliest recollections up to the present, you may find that you wander in thought from one remote time to the present. Now, this is quite natural, so please do not criticize yourself for even quick changes of thought. Because if you wish, you may try to follow a thought or emotional state from its earliest recollection, thinking progressively, right up to the present. As we continue, you may feel considerably stirred up and increasingly anxious, especially when the more unpleasant circumstances of your life are touched upon. Then also, there may be those instances in your life that, when you relive them, you have a sense of peace, of quiet and contentment. Regarding past happinesses, the now present recollection of those cherished events, which you often never actually speak of and are coexistent with a sense of guilt, may still give a quieting, restful sense of being contented. Your contented feeling may be of short or long duration, dependent upon how vividly the memories are relived, and also dependent upon the immediate urge of the emotional upset which is troubling you at present. I want you to keep in mind that every living human being has emotional and mental problems. There is meanness as well as kindness in your makeup. Each of these must have expression in you as an individual. This so-called sadism or meanness, that quality which is wanting in dignity and honor, at times being sordid, all of these in varying degrees seem responsible for many of your actions. This sadism is just there and must be given off in some way, as must also our eroticism and kindness. And if these qualities, which are quite real with you, are not given off, much emotional conflict may develop. So in your life, you must plan a program by which you can satisfy these very real elements in your makeup. Now the question arises with you, how can you get rid of your sadism temporarily or for all time? I say here that these qualities will probably remain with you for your entire life. But the burning or scourging effect of sadism especially will become minimized as you progressively and continually try to use up or get rid of this factor in any number of useful and beneficial ways. You can, if you are able, take up sports such as swimming, tennis, horseback riding, or if they are definitely out of your availabilities, indoor hobbies such as painting, handiwork, and constructive reading. You've heard it said, "Well, I got mad. Got in and did it." Well, temper is an outlet for sadism, and righteous indignation, if within reason, is a help at times. I recall reading an advertisement by a New York department store a few years ago. Plaster images perfect for throwing when you feel that you want to throw something, meaning that the image would break satisfyingly when thrown. It's not too bad to throw things if the action on your part doesn't harm anyone. However, you do not have the right to inflict bodily injury upon anyone else. On outlets of sadism, the prize fight ring is somewhat a licensed contest in which the participants get rid of much sadism. This likewise applies to onlookers who go to the fights, for they are also in a degree getting rid of some of their sadism by watching the bodily injury of another. You have frequently read of the wife beater or the husband beating woman. They often get rid of much of their sadism at times by indulging in an attack upon the other person. You may find that hard physical work will satisfy the urge regarding sadism in your case. In some cases, I find that arguments and the saying of unkind things to others will rid some persons of sadism. I find that the kindness in human beings comes out more readily than sadism. And it also is a prevalent idea among students of the mind that an individual may possess and usually does possess an equal amount of sadism, eroticism, meanness, and kindness. If you have had a recent physical illness, you will realize the sapping of your energy may cause you to give vent to some form of sadism to such a degree that only the sweetness of disposition and kindliness are evident. But in other individuals, you know, the illness would seem to curtail the kindness element and let the sadistic or cranky, mean, biting elements prevail. It may be that you have at times become somewhat agitated as you recall bygone instances in your past life or even your present life. But now I urge you to become complacent if possible, realizing that there is no reason to be upset or anxious or agitated about anything. Take the attitude that nothing much really matters that has happened. And time takes care of everything. Time heals all wounds, whether physical or mental. And so often, if you will just give time a chance, the outcome of any situation will be taken care of without any worry or bother on the part of anyone. So often you press time, hoping for it to pass more quickly. But this wish does no good, for time will pass in its own accustomed order. And in wishing for time to pass, you are merely wishing life away and nothing is solved. If you can learn to patiently await the passage of time and the soothing influence of the solution of a situation, you will assume a much greater attitude of peace. I want to impress upon you, worry will cloud good judgment and definitely will not solve any problems. It is only natural that you should be concerned about many phases of your life, about some difficulty not yet solved, about the illness of a loved one, the welfare of your family, a business venture, about something that is on your conscience, and any number of other conditions. But let your wonderings and doubts about any given conditions stop at an attitude of concern, not letting yourself get to the point of worry. Often an attitude of worry will grow and enlarge, usually out of all proportion, and situations become distorted by intense worry. The imagination goes into full play to such an extent that you may display an entirely different personality than if you are free from worry. You know how your feelings are lifted and your life seemingly carefree when your attitude of worry has been abandoned. You feel better physically and mentally when you've abandoned worry and anxiety. You must never lose sight of the fact that the physical and mental makeup of an individual do go hand in hand. When you feel bad physically, you are not on top of the world mentally. And when you are worried, anxious, agitated, highly imaginative, or otherwise distraught, you may experience any number of physical ailments. I feel that many physical ailments are brought on by an unhealthy psychological outlook. You must never unnecessarily give concern over the fear of death. Do not allow yourself to be stirred up, anxious, agitated, apprehensive, hyperactive, with flights of emotions, ideas, and actions. This will predispose so much more to ill health and discomfort than if you will take an attitude of unconcern regarding your well-being. Think constructively rather than destructively. And remember that a moment spent in unhappiness is a moment wasted, never to be gotten back again. No one can go through life without sadness and some misfortune. If you knew the innermost lives of the persons whom you most admire as great successes, you would find that each and every one is beset with many trials and difficulties which even to them had at times seemed insurmountable. If you will make a frequent counting of the blessings you have, you will find a healthy approach to a quieting influence. And your attention to the spiritual self must go hand in hand with your physical and mental being. I want to impress upon you that every living person has some ideas about religion, and one's beliefs in a religious way should go hand in hand with his mental self and also with his physical self. You must consider collectively the mind, the body, and the soul in order for you to be well-adjusted and integrated. The religious belief of each individual person is to be taken very seriously, because such individual belief is of just as much value as the belief of any high religious potentate. Just as a man's house is his castle, so is a man's soul his cathedral in which he worships as his conscience dictates. So frequently over the years I have been asked if one must give up his religion in order to undergo psychiatric treatment. To give up one's religion for psychiatric care would seem to me just as misguided as giving up one's powers of reasoning. I want you to know that many times in the course of treatment, I have found the patient's religious beliefs of great help in solving many of the problems which are confronted. Your religious belief can be of great comfort, especially during times of unusual stress. Never feel reluctant to admit your adherence to your beliefs, religiously speaking. For really, your personal belief in the power of prayer is never questioned. Never be ashamed to live what you believe. If you fear the opinions of others, you will damage your own emotional life. So often you may feel ashamed of something in your past. The happening may have looked all right to you at the time under different circumstances, but now you have a feeling of guilt about it, or even many happenings. They have happened. They are finished. At the time, they seemed all right or were entered into thoughtlessly, so why take them so seriously now? Mull them over in your mind's eye. Look at them squarely and try to recall the emotional content at the time they were done. Then let the remembrances of those incidents serve as useful reminders of what not to do. Your past experiences can be used as material aids to your present and future conduct. You may have learned that a certain food does not agree with you. Therefore, you avoid that food. Just so, you must learn that some action on your part has not contributed to your peace of mind and emotions, and therefore, in the present and in the future, you are going to avoid a repetition of that harmful action, whatever it might be. To live so that your actions are above reproach, mainly above reproach to yourself, is to live so much more contentedly and restfully. Regarding anything which you have done, you should be open and above board to yourself, censuring yourself, blaming yourself, praising yourself, seeing things as they really are. You will find that you cannot discuss your difficulties with everyone, because most persons are not interested in troubles of yours, and the world at large would not understand. However, as I have previously stated to you, if you have a trusted friend, physician, or clergyman, it might be that you would feel relieved if you could talk frankly with either of them. But above all, do not be ashamed of your past actions. Use your mistakes and even your anxiety about some circumstances as a bridge or a boat to help you over any rough waters that may come up again. I would like to mention a factor to you that people so commonly become concerned about, and that is growing old. The fears of growing old and becoming dependent upon someone else are seen so often that at times it would seem these emotions and thought processes exist in most all human beings. To a certain extent, within reason, it is normal for one to be concerned with his or her future. And aging does most surely go hand in hand with our future existence. Planning for the future is often necessary for personal and business reasons, but to live each day to the fullest extent gives much satisfaction. I feel that age is a condition of the mind and a sense of physical well-being. I have observed many persons of so-called advanced age who are actually younger in spirit and activities, mentally and even physically at times, than many persons far younger in actual years. From the psychological viewpoint, and for the continuity of stable emotional directiveness, I feel that it is unfortunate when persons too readily and too often discuss ages, either of themselves or their friends. This emphasis tends to direct attention to the older of our groups, who may begin to feel much older than their chronological ages might predict. In your quest for relief from tension, I would like to discuss sexual activity as it pertains to our state of well-being. Sex is primarily for reproduction, in order to keep the races going, and too often this fact is lost sight of. It would seem that sex was not meant to give any person pleasure primarily, but in making some phases of sex attractive and pleasurable, the races are propagated. Just so are functions of the body generally pleasurable, and attention to the body habits is seen to give pleasurable relief. The less thought, the less concern, at times reaching the stages of anxiety about sex and one's sexual powers, the more calm will be one's outlook. And he or she will probably find that sex attitudes and activities take on a more normal expression if one disregards them. Extreme concern or worry or anxiety of any degree does tend to cloud one's outlook to the extent that the difficulty causing the dilemma appears serious beyond all reasonable proportions. Undue concern may so stir one that he or she is useless to pursue any given course of action, and instead of being reasonable and useful, may be flighty in thoughts, emotions, and actions. The mind may flit from one subject or topic to another. The anxious one may become beset with doubts, fears, apprehensions as to the future, fear of impending dangers, fears of the hereafter, and fears of dire consequences for some probably more or less trivial violation of one's code of action. I learned many years ago to warn those patients coming to me for advice that sex and liquor caused more difficulties in life than any other things. If one can learn to make the sex desires and habits and the desires for liquor completely subservient to one's wishes and will, then we all have progressed immeasurably toward a goal of self-satisfaction. When we control our desires in any field, we live more efficiently and more calmly. You will ask why you are not so able to control your desires. Well, perhaps for too long a time you have permitted yourself indulgence at the slightest feeling of desire. Expressing yourself and giving vent to your feelings and emotions may be a relief, and your difficulties should be talked out extensively with someone, as I have previously mentioned. But there must be a certain curbing of your actions to live within the bounds of society. I advise you to try to take out your desired activities in a more healthful program. As you contemplate our talk, I would like to mention to you a few words about neuroses. I have never liked those patients consulting me to diagnose themselves as neurotics or having neuroses. You may have some nervous traits, yes, but disregard those and think of yourself as being well. Assume that you are well. And don't question yourself or others as to whether you will ever get well. The average individual thinks of himself as ailing for such a long time, often years and years. The reflexes within him have been running at such speed and building up such momentum and to such outlandish size that it will take considerable time to make the individual feel that there is really little, if anything, wrong with him or her. However, you as an individual can overcome these thought patterns that cause your problems. Just remind yourself that there can be no love so great that tomorrow may not find a greater love. Just so there can be no trouble so great that that trouble could not be greater. In your life, plan a program by which you can satisfy all the very real elements of sadism, eroticism, and kindness in your makeup. Consider sports activity or a hobby. Take an attitude of unconcern regarding your well-being. And remember that a moment spent in unhappiness is a moment wasted, never to be relived. You are not the only one who has troubles. No one can go through life without some sadness and misfortune. So make a frequent counting of the blessings you do have. Never feel reluctant to admit your adherence to your religious belief. Do not fear the opinions of others. Face reality and reestablish faith in yourself. Constantly remind yourself that past situations which have brought on the anxiety, concern, and intense worry are usually over and finished. So remind yourself not to be concerned further with them. Today and tomorrow is your concern. By looking constantly ahead with positive thought reflexes, relief is wholly within your reach.